Hey, what's going on, everybody? Today we have an absolutely amazing guest. They go by Jake. Now, Jake, I don't want to butcher your name, so you're going to have to correct me. Is it Jake Freed or Jake Fried?
It is Jake Freed, but it's spelled Fried, and I go by either, no matter what. But yeah, Freed is the official pronunciation.
Awesome. Well, Jake Freed is with us today. And now, dude, I've seen your work on the TL for a long time. Every time I see your piece, I'm like, yo, this dude is super talented. I don't even know how to really explain the style it is. So we'll get into your style, what you do, how long you've been doing it, and just how long you've kind of been in this space. But to start it off, when did you get started as an artist?
Yeah, so this is always a question that's hard to answer because it feels like it's always been who I was. So at least as long as I can, you know, have a memory. But yeah, I was a kid who just made art all the time. Loved making art. And then obviously, you know, lots of kids, I guess, want to be an artist. And we all know like that can seem like an unrealistic expectation in life. So yeah, I am an artist, right? It's like, it's not a profession. It's kind of like an identity. Visual art has always been my outlet. It's always been my thing to do. I feel like I've been doing it one way or another every day of my life. So I evolved from just being like a kid, yeah, that loved to make art, to being a teenager that was like really seriously pursued it. Then went to school for it. And I've just been kind of doing it professionally. And again, what it means to be a professional artist is complicated. And there's a lot of different answers. And yeah, it's led me into this point where now I'm kind of in this NFT Web3 ecosystem. But yeah, that's my answer. So I know I'll just say a lot of people become artists or discover art making like at different periods of their life. For me, it's kind of just been my identity forever.
Yeah. Always been with you. I love that. So I do want to ask you, since you mentioned it, you know, I've seen a lot of artists in this space. Some go to school, some don't. That's fine. Do you feel like going to school helped you personally develop your style?
Yeah. I mean, it's so complicated. So we were talking before we started recording, I am a professor of animation. So now I've lived two, you know, my early life and now like my adult life. And as a student, I had a lot of mixed feelings about studying art and I had good and bad experiences. I do think there's a lot of my development as an artist happened outside the classroom, 100%. But looking back at my life and now as a professor, like obviously there's a huge advantage to just sort of being surrounded by art educators and other young people who want to be artists. So the biggest thing that I see with my students now and that I experienced as a young artist was like, I was just sort of like, art can be so mysterious and it's such a big kind of unwieldy thing to, you know, kind of get your head around. Just to be around adults who are artists and other young people who want to be artists at the same time, like, it's probably a good idea, right? Like, it definitely made me a better artist and made me more confident to pursue these things. And I got more feedback and I was inspired more often and I got to try out a lot of different techniques and stuff like that. But I will say as a professor, like students are coming in with innate abilities already and certain amount of drive and confidence that you can't teach. What I can do as a teacher though, is like guide students, mentor them. And like, it's even like sports, like being a coach, like so much of it is just psychological and about maturation as a person. And so I'm just there as a guide. I'm like a lighthouse. But yeah, like I actually dropped out of art school for a while. And I ended up getting a degree in art history, which we can get into if we have time. But I wanted a more practical sort of like degree at a certain point. And I did find that you know, studying art and like being an artist are different things. And when you're an artist, like it's a personal, independent journey. You're a brand. You are working on things that don't make sense within like an assignment sort of structure. So yeah, I had to balance it out. But I've been super lucky to have great art education. I actually went to an arts high school. That's a longer story too. I think like art kind of saved my life, right? It was my identity and it's always been a thing for me to hold on to. And yeah, being in school, this is the way I felt and now it's kind of come true. A lot of classes I was in, I was like, I should be teaching this or this is a waste of my time. And now looking back as an adult, like maybe I was right, you know? But also I was like, I was a kid and like, what else was I going to do? Like it was better than nothing. And so, I was really impatient as a young person to like get out of school and just be an artist. And that's my story. So
I like that.
I say if anyone has the opportunity to go to school, like it's about your peers, it's about the specific faculty. Make the best of it, get what you want out of it. But yeah, if you can afford it and you have the time, like and the luxury to do it, like I don't think it's bad.
I agree.
I'll say this, like we're in a space that's all about innovation and new tech and stuff like that. Like certainly like universities and schools are like slower and a little bit more traditional and backwards and like are not going to get all that stuff. And there's no doubt that like if you're trying to be part of the cultural conversation and you're a young person, like being in school, it's 100 things. It's going to hold you back. You're not going to have the free time to like be on Twitter all day and be like dealing with collectors and all that stuff. So, if I was in college age and I was in the space and doing well as an artist, it's a conflict. But I do know some young artists who are in school and managing their careers and they're doing a really good job of it. And I think that's the healthiest thing to do.
Absolutely.
Because yeah, you don't want to wake up one day and wish you had done it. It's really hard to go back as an older person.
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing for me. I mean, one thing that you said that really stuck out to me was being around so many people that were like-minded and also wanting to do art. Whenever you're around people that are wanting to do the same thing, have that same drive, same passion, I find it, and I'm sure a lot of other people find it, much easier to do what you do. But you do bring up the point of you don't have the most time with your collectors. You don't have the most time doing what you need to do on Twitter in order to engage and be active. So it is kind of a double-edged sword, I guess, to an extent. I do want to ask you, though, when did you come into the crypto scene? Because the art side has been inside of you what seems like your whole life. That's just who you are. But what drew you to crypto or NFTs, and when was that?
Yeah, that's really interesting. So I'm the classic case of, like, art and NFTs like onboarding me into crypto.
Awesome.
And I think we're seeing that, and I think it's going to continue to be true, but it's like one of the best use cases to actually onboard people. Big picture, like this sounds so cheesy and like especially in the space you'd never hear this, but like I kind of hate money. I never want to think about it. It's never been a thing that drives me. It makes me uncomfortable, especially as a creative person, like the whole art versus like money debate, especially again, thinking with young people who are artists, like that's so fucking twisted that you're thinking, and I see it on the timeline, man, like some of these younger artists, I won't call their names out, but who are doing really well, like it's fucked up, man. People like are it's hard to tell what's about the art, what's about the money. Like you don't know who's your real friend. Like you got influence and all this shit. And so for me, most of my life, art making, I've like really tried to keep it as pure as possible. I'm a really unique person. I just know this because, again, I'm 38 now. Like, I've maintained like an independent art practice for like 20 years plus. It's been very difficult, and it's a conscious choice of like not going into commercial work, not pursuing a lot of influential campaigns or paid opportunities, and really just trying to make my art for art's sake and teaching and licensing my work to sort of pay the bills. So that said, crypto to me was most like, obviously it's more than just about financial stuff. It's about decentralization. It's a much bigger thing. But my idea of crypto was like Bitcoin before I really got in the space. And I just don't care about like stocks or money. Like, so it's just like, yeah, whatever. Like it's cool. I get it. But like, I'm not like in the culture and I don't really care. Lots of things happened at the same time. I mean, obviously like having a kid and like COVID and all this stuff. What really led me to crypto and NFTs was like my fans reaching out to me and telling me that I should do it. So I just answered this question. Someone's like, you know, how did you get into NFTs? It was like, it's literally Twitter or Instagram DMs, like people being like, when are you going to drop something? Your work is perfect for NFTs. That's my journey, is that like people were telling me looking back, it's like I've been making what we think of as NFTs like before they were a thing for like a decade. So my work is made physically, but it's to be really quick, I make these animations where I rework the same drawing or painting over and over again. So I'm scanning or photographing it as I go, and then I'm destroying the physical object. So I make these really elaborate animations that are handmade, but when I'm done with them, there is no physical. It's just the digital record of the process.
Oh.
But I'm relayering the same image. So I literally physically destroy it. So I've never really been able to sell real physicals. My work has always been digitally native. And my entire, I started as a, we have not enough time for my whole life story. I did start as a painter and evolved into moving image work by reworking my paintings and photographing them. And I've just sort of been riding the wave of like where the culture is going and technology. So like right when I started doing these moving painting experiments is when YouTube dropped and like smartphones came out and streaming video was possible. And then artists like had websites and then there was Vimeo and like there was like fine art video online. So my work has always been in this funny position where it's traditional, it's real world, but it's ultimately digital. And my films, my animations have been screened in museums and galleries and they're considered like works of art. Like I've never had to defend being a digital artist, blah, 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 is not art or whatever.
Yeah.
But they've never been like physical objects that like galleries could sell.
Right.
So they're sort of like video art in that way. But like I've just made my whole career by putting my this stuff up for free. So like the story of my success is basically like making these films and just putting them online for free and then kind of going viral and getting shared and building up attention through them with no financial kind of like, plan really.
Right.
But ultimately it all worked out well for me. And I think it predates kind of what we see in NFTs now that like art should be free. It should be everywhere, but someone can own it on record, on chain and can trade it and it has value and it's an asset. That's a one of one thing, but it's also remixed and shared and people can right click, save it and download it. And so that's been my experience. It's like my work has mostly been seen by people like screened at parties or like on remix, you know, VJ remixes without permission, or my work is all over YouTube with people putting music on top of it. And it's like a long time ago, I realized like, I can't stop this and I don't really think I want to. So it's like the more it's shared, the more it's remixed, like the more like memetic value it has, the more popular it is. And then like these big brands and these big bands will pay me more money to use them, license them. That's kind of the game. And then, yeah. All of a sudden when like Web3 came around, it was like, oh, people on Instagram are like, I can buy Jake's work. Like, when are you going to mint stuff? What's going on? And that's when I had to do the deep dive and see what was up. So that was probably like really the end of 2020, beginning of 2021. I had a kid and like COVID with teaching was just kind of obviously difficult. And it was like, wow, I could like, it's kind of like, I've always been waiting for this to happen, honestly. So part of my story is like museums and galleries have offered to like sell my work as editions with like the whole commission for a gallery and taking it offline and making them like, you know, official editions. Museums have actually reached out to, I've had my work in museums, like in temporary exhibitions. And then they've asked to like buy the piece or, you know, it just always felt weird or wrong. And it was like, I don't know. I like this vibe of like making it and putting it out there and then like owning all the rights to it, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, this was like, okay, we got this. Once I understood what was happening in the NFT space and really what it meant, it was like, I know I've been saying this now. We see it coming true more and more, but like, I know this is the future of like where my career is going and where like most of culture, but especially like fine art that like, it's really hard to define what it is and it needs a context and an art world structure around it. And there's a lot of interested people who want to own it. And like, I have a legacy and I can't just have my work live on like YouTube servers after I die. Like there needs to be like a real record of it. So when like, I was like, I can mint my work on chain, have like a provenance, we know the whole royalty debate, but like royalties still, it's not theoretical. Like I still get people respect royalties when you're like a recognizable name with like real collectors, like that still works, right? I don't really need the marketplaces to defend that. It's like, wow, this is what I've been waiting for. Yeah. And it's early days. Like I can help. It's like kind of my responsibility to help guide this thing because I hope people write. It's like this system is like made for me. Like this system is evolving out of artists like me. very much like where like some of the artists that we are very popular in the NFT space, right? Like Beeple and like these generative artists, like we've all been in this world already. We've just been waiting for the technology to kind of catch up here. So it was like, I got to join this space. I got to be a part of it. And honestly, I have to like, I feel like my role is just to elevate and inspire and show people like, right? Because especially in the beginning and still now, like there's a lot of low effort stuff. There's a lot of scams. There's a lot of stuff where it's questioning what is really the art? What is the financialization aspect of it? I just want to show people like, this is where real art can live. And like, this is what a real artist I think looks like in 2022 and how I can build a market for my work. And so, yeah, I just had to dive into it. And honestly, since I got in, it's just been all amazing. It, in a lot of ways, it feels like just vindication for a lot of the work that I've been doing for a long time. And it kind of going back to where I started here, bringing money and marketing into my work and having the provenance and collectors and stuff like that's really important to actually like disseminating the art to people. Good or bad, like it gives it value that everyone can recognize and understand. It gives it sort of like a marketplace where it's, because it's an asset that's tradable and people can collect it, it adds a whole nother layer of ownership and identity. And it's important to my work, to developing its value and its historical value and to having it being preserved and understood. And then ultimately, I think the success of an artist and is like their influence on the next generation of artists. And again, as a professor, and I see my influence in the space with young people, like I'm inspiring people to make it work and like, and to make art. And like, that's kind of like more than anything, that's what I'm trying to do here is move people. Absolutely. and share this, like what I feel like it's a gift. It should be free ultimately. So even though the space is about collecting and all that stuff, like, I'm really secretly just sharing my art with a lot more people. And most of the people in the NFT space don't own my work and won't. So it's like, it's an art dissemination device that's really useful and it helps allow me to continue to do it financially. So that's awesome.
No, I like that, man. There's a couple of things you said. For one, I have to say, I love whenever I have people on the podcast that can actually give me some lengthy answers. Shout out to the people in the past that are short, but man, they never give me nothing to work with. I love the substance here. So one thing is, I am absolutely blown away by the fact that your stuff is physical and you layer yourself. That right there, maybe I didn't do my research and people are listening like, come on, Sniper, you should have known this. But no, that right there is nuts. And that explains why I've never seen you more or less put out the physical pieces, because like you said, you kind of can't, you know, your stuff goes to the digital. That right there, I think, is intriguing as hell. Two, you are a teacher. One thing I love about that is I feel like that's just in you too. Like you're trying to help the others in the space. You're trying to teach them, you know, about art. You're trying to teach them what you know and help others. Like you said, you're not really here for the money. And I know people might think that sounds cliche and stuff, but man, you've been doing this long enough. You've had a lot of success. You're a great artist. You've been a teacher. So, I mean, I 100% believe that. And I've seen you on the timeline. You're not a cocky person. You're a very genuine person. And you're not really even someone who does a lot of talking. You usually post your work and you're more just strictly to the point. I love that about you.
This came up in another interview. Like,
yeah,
I don't know why. I do think it's part of being a teacher, but part of like, I feel like a politician in the space a bit, where maybe more than other people, like I'm just fascinated by it. Like as a subculture, and I just find it all really enjoyable. And like you're saying, like, it's obviously competitive, right?
Yeah.
But I have the luxury of like, I already feel like I succeeded. Like I'm not trying to make it.
Right.
I feel like I already made it kind of thing, which is such a gift as a human being. So, I'm just trying to enjoy it. And like, yeah, I have a lot of thoughts about what I think is good and bad and like when I think people are fucking up or not, but it's like, it's not my place. And just like in a classroom when we're having a critique or debate, like there's no right answer. And honestly, I'm just trying to like, hear everybody out, and everyone's voice is as valid as others. And this space is going to evolve anyway. Well, and I say this all the time. What I love about the space too is, like, it might not seem true to people who are just getting into it or feel like they're a smaller, you know, emerging artist, but like, there's really nobody in control. Like, it is decentralized.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, there's like whales or whatever, and there's cliques of artists and stuff, but like, it is open. And like, that's beautiful. Like, I really think that's like, it's been a bear market, so everyone's cynical, but like, I want to be the person to just remind everyone, like, this is fucking awesome, man. We're all just sharing our work. It's completely free. Anyone can come in here and make connections. You can discover so much great art. The vibes for the most part are super positive. And yeah, so I don't feel the need to like puff my chest or compete with anybody else. I'm honestly just trying to promote what I think is really good. Again, this does sound cheesy, but it's like, I feel a responsibility to be like a tastemaker here, especially because people are literally asking me what I like. Like, and that's what happens whenever I meet with big collectors or talk to other artists, like, and I was just in Miami for Basel, like, everyone just wants to know, like, what do you think is like, what's my opinion? So it's like, I clearly am respected for like my point of view and my taste level. And like, it's a good look for like NFT brands or marketplace or whatever to like, you know, mm-hmm. hear me out and stuff like that. So like, I honestly love playing that role. Cause it's like,
yeah.
Dude, just being a teacher is basically just being like, I think this shit is cool. Check this out. Here, like, your work makes me think like, maybe you should do this or that. Like, it's just a conversation. There's no right answers.
I like that, man.
Yeah, man. It's like, it's such a joy. And I've been around long enough to like know what it's like to be an artist where you really don't have that. Or where you're a young person and like no one takes you seriously or cares what you think about anything. So now that I have this role, like, yeah, I'm just trying to share my work, obviously, like, keep it relevant and engage with collectors and shows and stuff. But I appreciate what you're saying, because I really like to feel, I hope I'm focusing on the art more than anything. And I'm just kind of showing up and being part of it. Like, most of, like you're saying, my work's hand drawn. Like, most of the time, dude, I'm working.
Absolutely.
I don't have time to like grind. I do it too much, but like, I really don't have time to grind on Twitter because I'm actually making shit.
So whenever it comes to your stuff, I mean, so for me, man, I'm more of a traditional artist, and you might find this funny. I always found it hilarious in the space whenever people are like, oh yeah, I really love art, and then their favorite two artists are always Keith Haring and Basquiat, or Andy Warhol and Basquiat. And I'm like, okay, well, you know, what about the Hammershoys and the Caravaggios and the Waterhouses? And so that's interesting to me. And shout out to the people that do genuinely love Basquiat, Warhol, Keith Haring. I have several Keith Haring tattoos, huge fan. But I say that to say there's a lot out there, a lot of history, Edward Hopper, a lot of great, great artists beyond the mainstream that we see. So for me, I love that you know the history and stuff, and we'll speak on that in a second. But I find it very interesting that whenever you go to these places, people are asking your input. But I really like that, because I'm a person who feels someone of your nature who has been through all of this history. You've been to school. You're the teacher now. You have taken the legit art history classes. You've been there. You've done that. So I would like to think you have a great eye for artwork. You know what's out there. You know what to look for. You understand color theory, composition. You understand all of that. So I understand why people would ask you, and it's intriguing to know that they are asking, hey, Jake, what do you like? Like, what are you seeing? And I would love to ask you maybe what's one or two artists that you do like, or that you do like in this space. You don't have to share if you don't like.
Let me
go ahead.
You're making me think about a lot of things. First
go
of all,
ahead,
yeah.
Go ahead.
So like I said, I actually ended up going to school for art history. And before I was a professor, I was a museum educator. So I worked at the Museum of Fine Arts in Boston for a decade.
Wow.
And again, one thing you just get out of that, because it's an encyclopedic museum, is like, you're surrounded by art from the last like 4,000 or 5,000 years of human history. Mm-hmm. You realize like what a narrow little tiny place and time we are. you realize how much art is affected by the social context that the people are living in, and it has a specific nature to it. And that art, it's not just like my personal expression. It's like, I'm a product of living in the United States in 2022. And like, it just focuses your mind on thinking like big picture and like where you fit into that. And so I've always thought of my work in sort of like at least the last 100 years, the last like 300, 400 years. Whereas, yeah, I think most artists just kind of think a lot about the last 20 years. And that's why we keep coming back to these same people. And it's really short-sighted. And this is true this is just true about human beings, right? Like most people are listening to music that's made in the last 20 years. They're watching TV shows and movies in the last 20 years. They're reading books for the last 20 years. Their knowledge of world history is the last 20 years. Like, I kind of think that's always the way it's been. So it does take like a certain kind of mind click to think like bigger. There's a lot of, we can get into it too, man, like my Jewish background and just kind of that history, like makes you think it's just so these, like you think these big generational things. I don't know, man, I'm celebrating Hanukkah right now. It's like this 2000 year old, like myth, you know, like story. It's like, when you're in communion with like these really like big periods of time and you really feel that as an artist, like it does inform sort of like, I'm always interested in like what's really represents now. And it's not what happened 20 years ago. And that's like the wrong way to look as an artist. You should be inspired by a lot more stuff. What I love about the fact that this is a marketplace and it's about money in a lot of regards is that when people ask me, what do you think is cool? They're not just like, what should I go check out? But like, what does Jake think is like in 10 years going to be like, you know, noteworthy? Or it does remind me of kind of like, you know, like music snobs that are like trying to pick up like the, you know, what's cool before it's cool thing. Like who's the new indie band that no one's listening to yet. And that's kind of what the space is about with art. And that's cool, right? It is dangerous though. I mean, there's so much hype. Like you could literally hype an artist from nothing to the top of this space in a week.
Scary.
With the right amount of certain people, including myself. Mm-hmm. So part of me is like you were saying before, like kind of hands off a bit. As far as collecting, I'll just say, because I've done well enough that I've collected quite a bit. That's the way I'm collecting, man. I'm thinking about what do I think is like super, I mean, that's what I'll say to anybody. It's like, look at my collection, Jake Fried Vault, like, yeah, some of them are popular names, and I think they're popular for the right reason. Some are up and coming, but like, I'm looking for really unique voices more than this is timeless stuff, not NFTs, but like, it's about really original voices that I feel are being like really authentic and pure, and like are making work that's challenging. So generally, what I'm looking for these days, and what really excites me, and like when I mentor graduate students, like where I'm looking for like what I think is like, because right, as a teacher, you're sort of like feeding off of your students too, right? I get to go work with 18 to 22 year olds on a weekly basis. And like,
yeah,
there's something useful about that because they're way more tapped in like what's going on and like sort of the zeitgeist. Yeah. And I love, obviously, like as a contemporary experimental artist, like I'm sort of chasing innovation and new things. And like, whenever like a rapper is doing something different, it's like, okay, this is, and it's usually younger people, right?
Yep.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking for. And I just, as an art historian, I recognize that the stuff that's really popular in the current period is not always like what's, you know, kind of celebrated long-term. Typically isn't exactly, not, I mean, there is, but also that like art is a business and like, yeah, like art, I mean, Keith Haring, it's like, and Basquiat, there's, let's just go there, man. Like dying young is like, in a lot of ways, like a useful for collectors to define a narrative around you.
Yes.
And to limit your supply and to like, right. So like, I know people generally like their work and I'm not denying their influence. It's amazing. But like,
right.
A lot of it is kind of like what we see in the space. It's marketing and narrative and it's rock and roll and it's not about the art. And that's totally fair. That's the context. There's artists I love in the space whose art I don't love, but I understand why they're popular because of that. It's a whole brand. And then we see now, which is wonderful, and we're going to see this going forward forever, like, you know, rehistoricizing. It's like, wow, a lot of amazing women and queer artists and artists from, you know, from just like third world countries in the 20th century were completely overlooked, or folk artists or outsider artists. And honestly, a lot of, I was born in the Midwest and grew up there. Like, a lot of my favorite art is not blue chip contemporary art. It's folk art, American folk art. And a lot of, like, honestly, like medieval stuff that doesn't seem like it would be super relevant to people these days. Just certain aesthetics like that just like kind of spoke to me and feel timeless. And my work, yeah. So this comes back to the kind of work I make. My work specifically, I'm trying to make stuff that feels timeless or feels like, you know, pretty lofty and thematically. Like, I'm trying to like map like big ideas. Right. So I'm, my work is trying to pull from like all different periods of time and trying to make something that feels like it's beyond time or could, I always like to describe, like, I'm trying to make work that feels, and like you're saying, it still blows people's minds. Like, I hope it continues to keep that quality into the future. It seems to be doing that quite well, but like, I always want my work to feel sort of like it's before its time or like out of time, or everyone says, like, because it's handmade and it's digital, it's like, it's got this weird, it feels really old and it feels really futuristic.
Yes.
And that's why I think my work is going to last in a way that a lot of work tends to date itself. Going back to what I was coming, now I'm all over the place, but just saying, like, the most expensive artists of my lifetime are like Damien Hirst and Jeff Koons. And I don't like their work. I don't like what they stand for.
I hate it.
I think it's super cynical. So it's like, as an artist who loves art, who works in the museums and is a professor and is an art in the art market, like, and I'll just say like Cause, like, but all of that, like the big names are the ones that like, I think are financialized sort of brands more than they are about the art. I find the art pretty shallow. I think it's spectacle over substance, and that's why they're popular and that's why they're mainstream.
Absolutely.
And so, yeah, it's kind of like, I've obviously been limiting my, like, for me, if it was about like fame and money, I would have picked a different path a long time ago. And yeah, I mean, that's my story. So it's sort of like, what's great about the space is that like, I have the independence and the freedom and the ownership of my own brand and story that I can put it on chain, and that, I do think like my Twitter feed is, and like, you know, my Discord, like this is these interviews that I'm doing with you, like I brought this up in another interview, like just doing this interview with you and doing a bunch of interviews in the space and going on spaces and all that stuff. Like, that's not normal for the art world. Like, usually you have a gallery, it's super manicured, like image. And I love this space. It's like you're saying, like, authenticity, this is a real me. My work is real. There's no intermediary. Most of the shit I'm posting is not minted. I like, if anything, I'm like, every time I mint something and sell, it's like when I sell work, I'm like defeated. It's like, oh, I just let something go. I'm like,
yeah.
Like, I have to be a part of this. I want my work to be sold. I want to like move it forward and be part of the conversation. But like, that's like these are my babies, man. Like, and I'm giving them up. And like, it's not a feeling of like, yeah, it's like, am I doing the right thing for the work? Am I doing the right thing as an artist? Am I serving my work in the best way possible? That's my mission here. That's what I'd suggest other people do. Again, we are so early in this thing. I just think if you're an artist of value and you just treat your work with respect and your fans and your followers with respect and you stick around, I really do think this is a really cool cultural shift.
Absolutely.
And yeah, thinking historically, like these are the moments in art history that are really exciting when it's new and it's fresh and there's no rules and it's all being figured out. We're defining a new kind of era here. So yeah, awesome.
So for me, I like what you said earlier. People usually think within the last 20 years, and I want to say I've never thought about it like that, but I'm only 26. And I can tell you that almost everything or the people that I talk to, everything's always within the last 20 years. Nothing's really talked about beyond that. especially with art. Like, whenever I meet people at 26, I don't hear people talking about the traditional art. It's literally the Damien Hirst, the calls. And please put me on record, anyone listening in, I don't like Damien Hirst. He's definitely someone I feel is more about money than art. That's my personal take. Just like Salvador Dali, great artist, horrible person to me. You know, it's just, it is what it is. And, but your art, super timeless, I feel, because it does take me back to a Caravaggio time, in the sense of the architecture that you may see in it, or just the way things are crafted. But you have the digital aspect, which is obviously today's age, and it's kind of a mix of both, but it's not something that can be easily duplicated. Like my problem that I often find, I'm much more of a, I can't create what I like to collect. I love to collect people like yourself. I obviously cannot create that. I'm more of a Frank Stella, Carl Andre minimalist, yeah, color shapes guy. That's me. I live there. I've accepted it. But whenever it comes to your art, man, I genuinely feel like it's something that'll live for a long time, or at least I hope so, man, because I feel like you're a super talented artist.
That's so kind, man. It's funny you said that, because I honestly started out as an artist, like, wanting to be a Frank Stella, one of my heroes, and kind of a minimalist. This might sound, so getting into the art talk, like, seeing my work, it's very maximalist. It's just an insane amount of detail. It's, yes, like a overstimulated mind, and so much of my early life as an artist was like trying to repress that and fight it. And that so much of modernism and like is about reduction of form, like breaking things down to their essentials. And there's something so pure and beautiful about that. And I really want to be an artist like that.
Yeah.
And I'm attracted to art like that. But really my breakthrough as an artist was realizing like, that's not who I am, man. I am like the running mind person. I am the obsessive drawer. I am the get lost in the esoteric. And a big part of my artistic journey is just sort of embracing my true expression. So yeah, talking to young people and like you're doing, saying yourself, like you don't really like decide who you are as an artist. Like you actually, you find it in yourself. And when you're really doing it, it's uncomfortable and you question your own identity. It's like, I mean, that's powerful stuff. I think this is like spiritual, like
absolutely
human stuff here. Like you have to rid yourself of who you want to be or who you think you are and actually discover who you actually are. And that's like ripping the mask off. That's like exposing yourself. It's very vulnerable. That's what art making is for me every day, is like the only reason my art is ever good. And when it is good is when I'm like in that place of, I'm not in full control here. I'm really letting it be what it wants to be. I'm discovering something here. It's communicating through me. And it's this, like, it's this letting go of my sense of self or like what I, yeah. And it's like, it does feel like I'm discovering something deeper than myself. And it generally just feels like a discovery rather than an invention. And that's where I want my art to come from. And I think that is just kind of timeless. I think what I'm doing, like, I've always stuck to like, it's just mostly drawing. It's like, what could be more like low tech than that? It's just like, I'm just mark making. It's a kind of this, how can that ever go like date itself basically? But yeah, embracing the format of like our current era where I can make it move and bring that magic to you through the computer, through the screen. It's hard to know what dates itself in the current period you are, but like, yeah, I find it very fascinating as a historian. Like, it's very clear with, let's just say, comedy, right? Like, it's so hard for comedy to be funny like 30 years later. Like, it's almost impossible.
Yeah.
But the shit that is timeless, like, is Shakespeare, like Mark Twain, like there is comedy that is like, you know, like, there's a certain wit that just seems to like, and that's what I'm looking for in my visual language too, is like, what kind of compositions, what kind of imagery or what kind of like human expression just like will always be there. This is a great, I like that my work raises these conversations, but like, what's the role of craft anymore? What's the value of the handmade? That's why if I was going to talk a lot in the space and brag, it wouldn't be like, my work's better because of this or blah, blah, blah. But it's like, my work is certainly in conversation with these debates about like, is value come from effort? Does value come from the craftsmanship? Does value, and like, what is AI's role in art making? And like, what does it mean to be an artist in this era with AI? Like, it's like, well, my work is handmade. It's kind of like you're saying, it's not clear when you see it, but you know, there's something there that it's like, this is not like AI can't do this. Or like, this isn't a software, right? Like, it's like, whoa, this is like, just like straight from the hand and the mind of some person. I hope that I'm pretty confident that's always going to be the case. I'm saying I think great poetry or comedy, like that there's some true essence to it that just like, you know, it was 2000 years ago. Like it's this is still like, I still feel the pain of this dude. Like I still feel the, maybe the language has shifted, but like, this is what it means to be a human. Like there's like, this is me now. Like, right. That's what, like, you're great philosophy. It's like, fuck man, Aristotle, like,
yeah,
after all this time, it's still so on point.
Yeah.
I don't know if you read Aristotle, like go back, man. It's just like, Jesus Christ, like what it means to be a human, what we're dealing with day to day. Like, yeah, I got a car. Yeah. I got like plumbing and like a computer, but like, that's the same fucking thing, man. So I do think there's the collective unconscious and like our human evolution, like biologically, like will always be slower than the tech. And we have this sort of singularity with tech, but like, yeah, I hope, I mean, this is my prediction that like the stuff I'm doing now, and especially because it's in this digitally native space already, it's going to be even more important. Like it, there, like that real human touch, that real craftsmanship, spending a long time on something, like these are going to be the things that we are losing over the next 80 years in this century, where it's going to be, I think, really rare. Or I don't know, it'll go back and forth, right? It's kind of like the arts and crafts movement after the Industrial Revolution. Like we're going to have a push and pull, but I definitely hope that my work represents, yeah, again, not to be like a Luddite, but like, I really hope people are still drawing by hand in 100 years. And like as a professor and in this space, like I see that like, it is not a typical thing. A lot of my students don't, they draw on paper unless I make them do it. That feels weird, man. That feels like, I'm not that old of a guy, but like, wow, I'm definitely like on the generational edge of like all my teachers growing up and like my early young life. Like I wasn't drawing with computers.
Yeah,
he's got a real sketchbook.
Yeah.
There you go, man. I mean, there really is no replacement for that. And again, talking about a professor, like you can show me your animation you just made or show me all this spiffy portfolio or your OpenSea page or whatever. Pull out your sketchbook and it's like, oh, this is what this person's kind of thinking. Like, this is the real sauce. I kind of want my work to look like that. Like, and that's really where my work. So again, I made big paintings. I had aspirations to be like a big abstract painter, and I sold work as a painter. Like I did it. But really my work came back to this sort of like obsessive hand-drawn sketchbook. What I always say is like, to me, the root of being an artist is like an angsty teenager who like doesn't know how else to get this stuff out of themselves.
Absolutely.
That's where art like really came from for me. And like, that's still really what it is. It's still like that, I need to do it. And so like, that's what's cool. Like all my life, like again, titles and roles and status and like having a career and like a brand or whatever, like that all comes, that's all great, but like really it's like, it's all built on this need that like, I need to do this thing.
Absolutely.
And I might as well do it with purpose and like, in an organized way. That's what being an artist is for me, like trying to funnel that innate expression into something that's, that I can share with people in like a form that's understandable.
Dude, so it's funny. I do want to share with you, I mean, you probably already know this, but for the listeners, so it's very funny. A Vincent van Gogh quote is, if you hear a voice within you saying you are not a painter, then by all means paint. That voice will be silenced, but only by working. I share that with you all because I showed Jake my sketchbook while we were on video, because I'm someone, I can't, like I said earlier, I can't create what I like to collect, but I have to keep working to find what it is that, I mean, you know, I love art. I feel like it's in me, and I am someone who feels anyone can be an artist, but you got to work at it. You know, I know that I can't just wake up and be Caravaggio. I can't be a Waterhouse or a Monet whenever I just wake up. You know, people have went to school. People have dedicated their time to what they do, color theory, all that. And that's what I've learned. And even I saw a quote yesterday. Someone was like, yeah, I make art that you could have made, but just didn't. And that kind of stuck with me, because some people might see me putting circles on a paper. They don't understand why I put that circle there, why I chose that color. They could have done it. They chose not to. They didn't feel like it meant anything. So art itself is just really, I guess that's why I love it so much. It's much more than just the generative pictures. And I really feel why, that's why people say, oh, one of one art or traditional art or addition to art will live much longer. And I definitely think it will, because it's much more timeless. Your work is obviously, I don't care who's listening, your work is going to live longer than any profile picture project, because it's not the art that is driving those projects. People are not looking at Bored Ape Yacht Club. I love Seneca to death. She created an amazing ape, but people aren't looking at that like, oh yeah, I need that in the museum. It's the utility that came with it and what you got with it as well. People weren't buying pieces of art in the 1800s and thinking, oh yeah, I can't wait for the utility on this. That's just not what it was. Okay. But I find it very interesting what you do, man. And to know that we still have what I would consider a traditional artist or people that really know the history, I think that's why you'll continue to live on much longer than this space. If it was to die, or if this blows up huge, you'll be one of those starting figures, because you just make timeless stuff, I feel.
Thanks, man. Yeah, art serves different purposes. So, like, again, teaching in a museum, like, you realize for most of human history, art is not about personal expression, period. It's a very new concept still. And we might not value that as much, right? I mean, like, you can just imagine if we're in a period of like kind of liberal democracies, but like if we go back to a more totalitarian kind of like structure, like freedom of expression is a big no-no and is not going to be celebrated and will be repressed, and that work won't be valued, right? And like, again, most like work from the ancient world is not signed by individual artists. The individual artists didn't matter as much. And that's perfectly fine. Like, if they saw my work in that society, like it might not make sense in a certain context. So, kind of talking about art history, like now, yeah, we're looking back, like kind of what I was saying, the stuff that I love from, you know, last 2000 years or whatever, like I love it in the context of being a human being right now in the social context that I'm in. But I'll just say, like, just be creative, make shit, like it's good for you as a human being. If you really want to make it as an artist, like, yeah, we obviously prize innovation and originality and uniqueness in our culture right now. And I think that's all, I mean, I believe in that philosophically and politically, that's where humanity should be heading. So really think of art as like a celebration of your unique individuality. So kind of what I was saying before is like, you can't be a bad artist if you're really being authentic to yourself.
Right.
Like, yeah. And I see this with my students. Like, it's really not about skill. Like, it is about doing it a lot, so you get used to like expressing yourself and building up like technique. But ultimately it's like, if you're just a unique person with a unique voice, that's interesting. That's undeniable. I don't even judge it whether I like it or I dislike it. It's more like, it's so interesting. I don't know. So like, it's artists understand this. If you're emerging, it kind of seems like you're saying this here, like to be original is really, really hard. Like, I'm not sure people realize it, yes. Especially like collectors. It's not like people are looking at their feed and mimicking stuff or looking at Basquiat and like it's coming from a good place. It's like you learn through imitation, you learn through like what art means to you is the art you saw before. And so to like find art or make art that you've never seen before, to make something that's never been made before, like that is one of the, I think takes extreme intelligence. Like I'll put the word out there. Like that's where genius is. Like that is what genius is. Like, so it's not like, don't, it's not easy. And it's not really even like a practical like process. It's like, it's a kind of a spiritual, psychological. I mean, this is again, as a teacher and a mentor, like it goes deeper than like what can be written down or almost communicated through language. Like it's a, I'm really telling you, you got to go to this special place where you're really forcing yourself to think outside. You know, it's hard to put this into language, but like really thinking outside the conventional box of what you think art making is or what expression is or who you are. You just got to take risk and experiment. But it's also like that risk and experimentation needs to come from an authentic place where you're frustrated. Sounds like you're kind of saying that a little bit. So not to like be the professor here, but like that frustration you're feeling is really healthy. Don't fight it. Like that's your gift. So like, that's how I feel. Like if I just felt like I found it, man, I would just stop. Right. Like,
yeah,
it's kind of like that frustration of like, I can make this better, more different. Like, why is it so hard to be a good artist? Like what the fuck? I'm doing this every day for like my whole life. And every day it's hard, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's the feeling. And it's hard. And I like, it's like you finish work and you, I'll say this as an artist where people like, again, I get positive feedback. Like, I beat myself up a lot. I work really fucking hard. When I'm done with work, I'm generally kind of dissatisfied or like conflicted about whether it's good enough. I'm trying to be really good. I'm like really trying. So like, it's hard and it's frustrating. And it's not like a fun thing. It's like a mission, like a, you know what I mean? Like it's a battle. I'm wrestling with this thing and I'm trying to control the beast. So I'll just say this, if you're a younger artist and you're listening to me and like you're a real artist, I think you get what I'm saying. And what I want to tell you is like, that's the right way. Like if you're, don't think being mad or upset or feeling like you're not good enough, whatever is like defeat. Like that's actually like the feeling. That's the way it's supposed to feel, I think. Ultimately this is what, like, I think a lot of artists can relate to this too. Ultimately, I feel like I'm failing at what I'm trying to, like kind of what you're saying. Like my true expression is not coming through all the way, or like, people like my work and my general feeling is thank you, but also like, you don't realize that I'm better than this. Like,
yeah.
Don't say like that I'm great. Like I'm not great. Like I can do better. Like, I'm kind of just frustrated all the time that I'm not. Yeah. So it's like, I've gotten used to it. And now I do realize, and then I tell this to my students, like when I am like, I'm good, I got this, I figured it out, like that's when the work suffers. So like part of me has realized, like, stay in that zone of kind of being pissed off. And this like not being jaded, like where when I see others' work that I really love, like I kind of, this is where I want to be too, is like I want in the space as well. I want like every other artist to be better than me, if that makes any sense. Like I love it when there's an artist that I feel like challenges me or is better than me or is like doing something that's so interesting that I feel like, man, am I like pushing it harder? Am I like, that is so badass. Like I love feeling that. Like that's the feeling I'm chasing actually in this space and just kind of in life as a professor. And because I want something to chase. I want to be inspired too. Like, I think consuming art when it's like, you're kind of saying like the art that you collect, I'm assuming is art you really admire and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like it feels good to admire other art. And I'll say, I feel like it's really easy as an artist or in the space to just hate on everything else. Like be like, right. Like I get where that's coming from, honestly. because it feels competitive and it feels like if someone else is being celebrated, you're not or whatever. But like, that's my advice to everyone. It's like, it's good to be pissed off. It's good to feel like there's other artists around you that are better than you. That's the place you want to be in.
Yeah. 100%.
That's where I'm trying to be. So like, I'm just rabbling on now.
But, no, you're good. You're good.
I do think I'm getting at the essence of like my vibe and like where I'm coming from.
Yes.
And what I think it means to be an artist. And what I see in this space. So like, I think my work is going to last. And I think a lot of like talking about PFPs, man, it's so interesting. Like, I don't know how much time you have. I don't know how much time I have either, but like,
oh, I'm good,
this is a longer
man.
Conversation. Okay. You know, I did a fake rare this year. I'm going to assume most people listening to this kind of maybe get that, what that is, but like Pepes and fake Pepes, like, or some of the kind of like the OG stuff in the space and hold a lot of memetic value. And it's like, it is sort of a middle ground between being selling art and selling a collectible or selling like a PFP in a way. It's much deeper cultural baggage than just like, this is a work of art. Like it plays in this ecosystem. I've fully seen how valuable it is to me as a creative person. It's brought so many people into my work who wouldn't have otherwise engaged with it. It's been collected a lot and is valued a lot because it's like, it's hyper native to the space and it's hyper relevant to right now. And it's got social media meme context. And so I don't just think in my work, but I do think in art in general, like this space, people are going to be writing like PhDs about this in 20 years in art history programs, without a doubt, that like the memetics and the social mediaization of art is becoming intertwined in a way where it's becoming harder to separate. In a way, I think I'll say this, like the crypto punks are in that weird middle ground where like, I'll say that this is funny. I own a Cryptodes. I think Cryptodes are like the ultimate, like work of art PFP.
Okay.
Like I like them because of the way they look and what they represent aesthetically in the space. And I just think they're like, they're clean enough, but also weird and artistic identity of Gremlin enough to be like, it's a work of art. It's a PFP project as a work of art, when it came out, how it was collected, the memetics and the conversation around it. And that ultimately, right, there's like no, like there's no utility to it. So it was one of those, like, we saw the wave of PFPs and we still see what's happening with Yuga Labs. But like, it was like, yo, this is like, it doesn't know what it is. And like me as a collector, that's it's weird. What makes it weird, where like, I really actually think it might have long-term art value. And I think CryptoPunks could in that same way, where a lot of the PFPs are just like the way they're traded and thought of, and that like they're almost like anti-art. And I do think this might be a controversial take or whatever. Like the Bored Apes and like the Mutant Apes are like so clearly aesthetically like challenged or like in certain ways that like that they never had to worry about that conversation. Like they clearly are about, they're not about the art. And I, you know, like this is where like I can, almost every PFP collection is not about the art.
I don't feel none of them are. I really don't.
Yeah. But I do feel like there's a lot of collectors who think it is, and I don't want to hurt their feelings. This is talking about me being a politician. Like, there are artists who drop PFP collections, and then it's like, yo, this isn't.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've kind of done a similar thing. I will say, like, so the fake rare thing is really special, when I like really think about like the future and all that stuff, like I think it's going to have a lot of value, and it might rival some of my actually much more substantial artwork in price. So that means that like my art is super relevant culturally or whatever and has value, but then there's things like that are collectibles that have value too.
Yeah.
And they're like in conversation and the values are all weird because of it. I also released the Night Vision series where I took one of my one of ones, which is like a 1 minute animation, which is 1,440 frames. And we just fractionalized it. Every frame is an NFT in a collection. So it's like a one of one of 1440. So people are buying those, and then you can redeem it for a physical print. So it's like kind of going backwards.
Right.
Like you buy the digital asset, and then you can redeem the hand signed print of the digital image, which was originally made as a physical image, but was destroyed. But that's kind of like, it's people are buying them and they're beautiful and they're getting them printed and they are art. But it's also like you're buying a kind of like a collector pass into my ecosystem. It's sort of like the smallest token you can get. And it's like understood that like I'm known as an artist for the moving image, and that like the one image is sort of like a collectible as much as it is. It's not the full thing. Right. So all this to say that like, I think they're mixed. I do think my one of ones and like my limited editions are like the closest thing to just like the art and should be the most valuable and will be. But I'm not going to, part of it just feels like sort of a conceited, like snobbery thing to be like, if I put my work as a collect, like on a shoe or it's sold, as a, like, I'll be honest. Here, I'll say this, like, I'm actually into this. Like, my work is going to, like, these night visions, some of them are going to be used as, like, sort of, like, rare traits as backgrounds in, like, a PFP project. I get what I'm doing there. I'm, like, adding memetic value to my artwork and, like, bringing my NFTs into another NFT ecosystem. But I'm not pretending that, like, those PFPs are, like, better or more, you know, I don't know. It's, like, you know what I mean? Like, I think do. It's just cool to be a part of the conversation, honestly.
You're not thinking that your art being on the background, you're like, oh yeah, now I'm adding value to their stuff. It's like, hey, I'm just being included and I'm just working alongside
another
artist.
Or that devalues my art, that like my art is PFP backgrounds. It's
right.
Like, no.
it's still a Jake Fried piece that he created and took his time.
It's a totally new thing, right? This has never happened. It's like, all right, you're taking this, like you're a fine art gallery artist, and a trait in a collectible, like collecting, let's say like a Pokemon, it's like bringing it into a Pokemon card. It's like, yeah, fine art mixed with like a card collectible series. It kind of makes art more mainstream and pop culture than it's ever.
Yeah.
It's kind of what I love about this space. I don't talk about this a lot publicly just because it seems so kind of boring or like thought it's like, it's a little deep, but like, what, as I said this before, everything about this space is ultimately, I'm just trying to get people to see my art.
Yeah.
Not to market it, just to like, I think my art should be seen by people and I want to get it out there. And I want, so like, how that happens in, that's why I got online in the first place, right? I had paintings, like that was the whole thing. It's like, I live in Boston. I had a painting show. This is right when I started to do the animations. I had a painting show in North Carolina. So like I put my paintings in a U-Haul, like drove down to North Carolina, installed the show. It's like a solo show, pretty good gig for like a young artist. Mm-hmm. It was up for like a couple months. It had some articles written about it. There was probably like, honestly, what, like max, like 10,000 people come through the gallery, sell some pieces. That's it. It's like in the world of the internet and like online culture, it's like, that is so small ball, like so regional.
Imagine getting on Twitter, selling a piece, and then just that's it. You just sign off Twitter, get off the computer, just you're done for the day.
It's not even that, because like at least on Twitter, like people are seeing that it happened and like all this stuff.
Yeah.
So like this was like beginning of like, yeah, like Facebook and YouTube. So it's like the minute I started making the moving image work and I had to put them online to share them with people, and this is what happened was like some of my pieces got like hundreds of thousands of views and like blog posts about them and went on Reddit and got like a million shares on Reddit with like thousands of comments. It's like, this is like 2005 or whatever. It's like, what am I as an artist? Like what am I doing with my life? Am I just going to be like, I'm not right. Like, let's just be honest. Like if I'm selling my work at like a local gallery or craft fair, like I'm not going to be the next Picasso, or I'm not going to like change the world. Like it's about using the medium of like mass dissemination or whatever. So like the minute my work was shared online and then it started getting licensed to be used on like Adult Swim and like, you know, 20 million people are seeing it. It's like, all right, I want to be a fine artist, but like when it's on TV, 20 million people see my work. Like,
you're on Adult Swim?
Yeah, I've been on Adult Swim. I've done commissions for them and shit. And they, I wrote, yeah, so.
Wow.
That's how most people saw my work. And now it's most people saw my work online. And I know, like, in 5 years, most people will have seen my work as an NFT. Because this is, right, like, my work now has, we don't need to get into it, but, like, let's get back into it.
Yeah, we can.
This is where the sales matter. My last one of one sold for 72.5 Ethereum on Super Rare.
Jake, that's crazy, bro.
Yeah, right? Because.
And those listening in, Jake is, I mean, I don't know how many people have heard Jake. This is coming from no place of bragging or boasting. Most genuine guy I've probably had on this podcast, one of the many. Yeah. And I think it's very important about transparency and that artists talk and can feel comfortable sharing what they sold it for, sharing what they do, how they make it. So I just want people to know that listening in. By no means is that a brag or boast. I'm very, very, very proud of you. Not that you need that, that you were able to make that. So yeah, let's talk about that.
Yeah, just to say, like, think about my work. This is kind of the metrics, right? Like, it started with views and likes. This is, everyone knows this story, Web 2 to Web 3.
Yeah.
Your work can have a million views on Instagram, and that's dope. And people realize, wow, this guy's popular and it's got something going on. And I can, behind the scenes, get commissions and license it and stuff. But yeah, you never talk about money. I'm not going to go on Instagram and be like, I just licensed my film for $10,000 to this musician. But like, yo, God, I mean, that's what your artists you follow on Instagram are doing, right? Yeah. That's how they're making a living. But all of a sudden, in this space, it's completely decentralized and public. And it's like, that's the new metric. It's like, my work is valued enough. Like, real collectors are buying my work for this amount. If you want to buy my work, this is how much it costs. If you bought my work early, you bought it for this, you resold it for that. Like, people see that. And that's the new, like, metric and currency. And I know in the next five, we're still so early, but in the next 5 to 10 years, people are going to be like, this dude was selling one of ones on Super Rare, one of the highest, you know, selling artists then. Like, I'm not stupid. I know what that mean. That means, like, narratively, and that's, you know, like,
yeah,
that's the game, dude. Like, and so I've been, it's like, to get really good collectors, to get the work really taken seriously, to build that value. And then what's going to happen, right, is like the entire culture is going to come here because they're going to have to. Mm-hmm. It's going to be the same thing again. I mean, that's what's, yeah. So, and, retro, I mean, we're already seeing that. This is a longer story, but like, the artists that are doing well in the space, like me, like, did do commissions, had jobs as professors, right? Like, I've cut back on that. And because we have this revenue stream where we're actually, like, selling our work to real collectors, what that's going to mean for, like, the culture where, like, corporations, universities, websites, like content websites and stuff, and streaming services, like, they kind of have to come to us and, like, pay up in a way they haven't before. And, like, all that shit that we've been fighting for, right? The whole idea, kind of what we started this conversation, growing up, being an artist was like a joke. Like, you are not an artist.
Absolutely.
I think they said this to me literally in school. They're like, there's only like 10 people alive in the United States who are full-time fine artists who are actually, like, paying their bill. Like,
yeah,
there's some truth to that. Like, you kind of, like, needed to be a living artist who is represented by a gallery in Soho, right? Like,
now,
like,
you don't need that.
And, like, literally, this might be the only time ever, like, hopefully it stays this way, where, like, there's enough interest and there's a community and there's a culture that's growing here. And yo, I mean, you're seeing it with, like, let's just say X Copy or some artist like that. Like, there's enough history in the space now to see, like, artists just, like, their value just skyrocket. That, like, you should pay attention in the space if you're, like, a serious art collector or a serious artist. Like, you better, you know? So I don't know if that answers the question, but it's sort of like, my art now lives in this NFT space. I'm aware of numbers. I'm aware of the memetics. I'm aware of community-based, the power of communities. Mm-hmm. And that I'm not just getting collectors and selling work. I'm actually, the selling the work is the after effect of, like, building a community.
Absolutely.
And building a brand and all that stuff. So, yeah, I'm just, I think everyone should be super excited.
Dude,
this is my message growing into the new year. Like, whatever, it's been a bear market, blah, blah, blah. Well, let's go back to PFPs versus art. When I got in the space, and most of the time in the space, like, PFPs have been the whole conversation. Like, people were really sleeping on some of us for a while.
Literally.
And my thought was always like, yeah, this is like super fad shit. And the art is obviously what's the most important stuff here. And we saw with the bear market, yo, like, the collectors who are in it for PFPs, a lot of them are gone. And everyone who got in here for the art, like, we're like, why would I leave? Like, where am I going to go? Like, what?
Yeah.
What does leaving even mean? Like, what? So it's so cool to see. This is, again, it's like, I'm kind of like, just, this is all anecdotal, but I am 100% confident this is going to be like something that's written in the history books in 20, 30 years. Like, there are more people collecting art, like, than ever, like, just because of this space. And young people who don't even have a lot of disposable income are collecting art like they were collecting sneakers and collecting albums in the 70s. Like, it's happening, and it's yeah, we got to circle back to, like, what is humanity working towards here? Like,
yeah.
What do we do? If we're not just a consumerist culture that's like cycling new generations to like feed the economy, like, we're actually trying to advance as a species, right? We're actually trying to like make the world a better place. Some of us, consuming art, making art, talking about art, like, it's all positive. This is why I do it. I really like, yes, saving lives as a medical professional is like really important. Like, being a lawyer and like solving legal disputes and stuff is really important. Like, being a cop is really important. But like, long-term, like, big picture, like, human stuff, like, what are you doing day to day with your life? Like, what matters long-term? I really think, like, I've seen in a museum, like, guys, like, we're not, almost nothing from 1,000 years ago has any value except like the art.
Bingo.
It's all disposable, man. It's kind of like an existential crisis moment. You have to kind of realize, like, what is going to last from my life? Like, what am I doing in my life that is going to last? I mean, it's obviously, you want to be kind to other people in your life, and your family matters a lot. And now that I'm a father, like, it's kind of like, you know, all that matters is like my daughter and like providing for her. But beyond that, my legacy, like, you know, the house I have, the car I drive day to day, like, even what I'm doing as a teacher, the food I'm eating, it just seems so pointless long-term, where it's like the drawings I'm making every day, the art that I'm making, kind of feels like, wow, every day I'm making something that's like really big deal.
That can last
I
forever.
I like that. And it's hopefully it does. Yeah. And like, that's a real head trip, man, to like do something every day that feels like it has purpose and is long-term.
Yeah.
That's what I think the space is bringing to a lot of people. There are so many artists in the space and collectors who are new to art and art making, and, damn, I mean, like, that's what artists have been trying to do forever. And it's always been so cheesy with like community art initiatives and public television. And like, I'm part of it, man. I was a museum educator. A big part of my job was just getting people in the museum, and especially children who wouldn't typically like just visit those kind of institutions, and engaging them with it. And as an educator, like, you're talking like most of your friends don't know anything from 20 years ago, right? Like, I taught like K-12 and undergrads, like, they don't know shit. They don't know what's good now. They don't know anything. They have no references. So it's like everything you show them is super valuable. And that's what I feel like I've been doing with my life, is like giving the gift of like, yeah, I mean, come on. If you're teaching a 16-year-old who's like really talented, like, here's Kafka, man. Here's like Kubrick films. Like, here's, and especially as an animator, like, I share some on my feed. I should do a thread of them at the end of the year now, but like, I've just been like dropping like experimental films from the last 100 years that are just not super mainstream or not online. And it's like, I feel like I'm sharing a gift with these people. Like, this is art that exists. You haven't seen it. I think it's really valuable for you. So yeah, big picture, I just think this is a really exciting time for the art world.
It is. I would like to think that it is, only because it's it's never been this easy for people to go collect great art from amazing artists. I firm believer, you know, back in the day, you had to go get the stuff. You know, stuff was not digital. You would have to go find that art piece, get it original as well. And then not only that, you know, me doing a podcast with artists and founders and people in this space, that's kind of the first of its kind in a sense. I mean, I guess you look back at like Warhol whenever he was partying with Basquiat and he had his own little, I forgot what the magazine was. But even like, even then, like it wasn't common for people to just be able to hear from artists or be able to talk to the people that have been doing the artwork. So I really feel like you said, the people that are here for genuine art, the people that are here to collect art, why leave now? Because this is the easiest and best it's ever been in the last 1,000, however many years it's art's been around. And it's funny that you say, you know, whenever you go, whenever we all go, that's the one thing that is promised in earth is death. Only thing that's promised to us. Whenever we go, to be able to create something that lives eternally, much, much longer than you, the only thing that would be able to destroy that would be the earth literally destroying. So I can't even wrap my head around being able to create something that outlives me and much more than me. But Jake, I don't want to hold you too long. I want to be respectful of your time. We've went for like an hour 20. It's been an amazing, amazing podcast. I want to jump over to the five questions if you have a couple more minutes.
Yeah, let's wrap up in the next 10 minutes for sure.
Awesome.
But I love what you're saying, man. Like, it is a bit about trying to achieve immortality. I think that's like the human drive in a lot of respects. And you see that. It's kind of what I teach my students. But when you look at ancient Egyptian art, it's like they were preparing for the afterlife in a very serious way.
Yes.
With all this stuff. And like, we're looking at it and talking about it now, 5,000 years later. In certain respect, they achieved what they were going for. Maybe not in like kind of the spiritual transcend, or maybe they did, who knows, but like they left a physical record behind. And yeah, that's a big part of what I'm trying to do is like, I want to, yeah, I just fear of death and fear of like being, having a meaningless life. Like I'm trying to make something that lasts and pass it forward. All right. Five questions. Go.
Boom. Let's go. Okay. Number one, what is your goal in 2023?
That's a great question. keeping it focused on this space, 2021 was like such a head rush and so just like so much happening and so much new ground. 2022, like we saw a lot of challenges like in the space, just other artists struggling. And like, I just, again, like my goal is just to keep, make 2023 just like positive vibes no matter what, kind of what I've just been saying, like, make sure I'm focusing on what really matters to me, which is the art and the positive community. And as an artist, honestly, like just trying to remain focused because anything can happen. You just see the space moves so wildly and there's all these temptations. And let's just say there's like another huge bull run, or this is kind of what's been, I've had to learn up to say no a lot this year in a way that I never have before. It's a weird struggle to have, but like I'm literally saying no to really good opportunities and really big brands and partnerships. And it's because it's like I can't do everything. And I know that if I do too much, it will it'll drive me crazy, first of all, but it'll just sort of like spread my message too thin. And so I'm just trying to be very I'm trying to go into 2023 very conscious of like, I don't need to do too much. What really matters with me? Who are the people I really want to work with? And that I'm gonna have to say no to good opportunities. So you want to hear artists talk about the real shit? It's like you see something on the feed where people are going nuts, and it's a cool show or it's a cool thing. It's like I said no to that because I couldn't do everything. And it's like, yeah, I feel a sense of like, did I just say that? Should I have done it, or like just kind of bummed I'm not a part? I don't know. I want to do everything.
I get that.
I want to say yes to everybody. So making sure I'm not saying no to too much, but not saying yes to everything. And I feel like this year, sometimes it felt like it got away a bit away from me. I was just at Art Basel. I had like five things going up on. And there was a few, there's just moments this year where it's been like, I don't like that feeling of like, there's so much of that in the space, right? You're putting yourself out there and you're doing a lot of, you're taking risks.
Yeah.
So like, I want to take risks, but I don't want to feel out of my comfort zone too much. But it's kind of what I was saying before. It's like that balance. I want to be frustrated and pissed without being like angry. And I definitely want to watch being too happy. What kind of, like, kind of your, like, things are going really well for me.
Yeah.
I've got a beautiful wife and daughter. I got a great thing going. Like, I just want to make sure I don't like let it go to my head too much, or think like, I want to be prepared for this to not be going as well.
Right. You just want to be prepared.
Yeah.
I get that. No.
Not that I think it won't. I actually am very optimistic, honestly, about the coming years. But it's my sensibility where it's like, hubris, man. You got to be careful of that stuff.
Yeah.
So I just want to be, I'm completely prepared for 2023 to be a shit show, and I'm okay with that, basically.
Okay, cool. Yeah. That's all we can do. I feel, we're here for the right reasons, I would love to think, and we just wait it out. But of course, you always want to have a plan. You never really want to get caught off guard, would be in a terrible position. But like you, I'm very optimistic, and I'm excited for 2023, man. I'm excited to see what you build. Not only that, I mean, I know you got some great things on the way, so super excited to see.
That's the truth. I mean, I've gotten really good at holding alpha back, but like, I obviously have things planned already. there's a lot of exciting things to be excited about, for sure.
Good. I like that. And thank you for now saying no to this. I was so excited to be able to get this opportunity and just speak with you. Big fan of your art. Number two, though, man, would be, all these aren't really Web3 related, so you can answer them however you want. If you could live anywhere in the world, where would it be?
Live anywhere.
Anywhere.
Yeah, great question. I mean, I feel like we're, again, humanity. The fact that that's a question that we can ponder these days, and I do think that will be more of an accessible question for human beings going forward, and I think that's a good thing. Part of my history is like, I'm from Ohio, and part of my artistic journey is like getting out of there, honestly, and coming to Boston. And then I lived in North Carolina for a while, and like, where I live has always been, I've always had the luxury or like the tenacity to like choose it. And I tell my students this a lot too, because it is a natural human condition to just stay close to where you're from. And I think there's a lot of value in sort of like being intentional about leaving or like going places. And obviously as an artist, in my lifetime up to now, not so much anymore, but like being in LA or New York or like the Eastern Seaboard in the States, at least, was like a big leg up, because you're just surrounded by a lot of museums and galleries and other artists and stuff that's going on. Now, and this is a very personal question, Boston, I live here because I teach here and I love it, mostly because it's super liberal and cosmopolitan and international. And it, to me, not to put anybody else down or whatever, it feels like the most like not American city. Like, I don't worry. Like, come on, man. I don't, you live in the States, I'm assuming.
Kentucky.
Okay. There you go. So dude, you kind of know what I'm talking
about. Yeah, I already know, man.
No shame, dude. This country, like, especially there, like the red blue divide and like all the, like, there's a lot of shit in this country. Like, I don't have time for, man. I've gotten to the age now where like, I just have to recognize that like, there's a lot of ignorant people mm-hmm. who are never going to fucking understand where I'm coming from or what's going on. And I just do not, I can't.
Yeah. You can't like, please everybody
on a daily
man.
Basis. And I don't want to be around it. And, again, as a Jewish person, as someone who's like diverse and like has diverse friends in life, like has gay family members and all that, like, I've just lived through it. Like, I fucking hate that shit. So like, I'm going to live in a city that's super liberal and left. And this, my students, man, are all like, right. They're art school kids. Like, they define like bending what identity means and all this stuff. And I love being surrounded by people like that.
Absolutely.
So now that I've been going to Miami several times for art stuff and crypto stuff, like,
yeah.
My folks are older and live in Southern Florida. It's like, it's really the weather more than anything. It's like, well, Boston's kind of sucks in that regard. And it's very expensive to live here and raise a child. So I am at the age, my daughter's in preschool, but like once we start like actually getting into the school age stuff and thinking about that, I'm aging out of the, like, I need to be in this city specifically, where my wife and I, we met here and like, we've been pretty like stalwart, like not leaving the city people. That said, my wife's also from Iceland. Iceland's just so cool. Yeah. Reykjavik's so cool. And wouldn't mind living there.
That'd be cool.
I mean, kind of all this is like thinking like 20 years ahead, but like having kids and then post that, like, and thinking about the metaverse. I don't know. It's nice to be near New York. It's nice to be in Boston. But the truth is, I'd really just want to live somewhere where like I can make my work, be it. Man, I can't answer anything in a short form. So.
Oh, you're good, man.
Okay. I'll say this. I've been through this journey. I moved to Asheville, North Carolina. That's why I had that painting show ultimately.
Right.
It's basically like kind of the dream city in my mind for someone like me. It's natural beauty, affordable, very creative, great food, lots of culture, chill vibes. But when I lived there for a couple of years, and it was like almost too good for me. It was like too much like me. There was like no kind of adversity. There was no grit. There was no essentially kind of like that urban. The whole time I lived there, I like talked too fast for people. Essentially. I was like in too much of a rush. It like didn't vibe, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I was kind of running around and people were like, dude, like chill the fuck out. Man. And I was like, yeah, exactly. Come on, man. Chill out, it's kind of like Ohio to Boston too. It's like, what are we doing, man? Like, I gotta change the world.
Go.
I gotta like make fucking art. Like, everyone's just like so comfortable and sitting around. Like, so I do love that. Like, Boston's cold. Boston's like kind of like messy. You know, it's rough. People are short. Like, yeah. You know, it just vibes with me. And I feed off of that. So
I like that.
I don't know if I can leave at this point. We'll see.
Yeah, that's like me, man. I mean, I'm in Kentucky and it's like complete opposite. I went to New York and everybody was on the go, on the go, on the go. I'm like, yo, can y'all like slow down just
100%.
One bit so I can like get my stuff? Like, let me catch up. So, I mean, I love Kentucky. Being a person of color, it's a very divided state. You know, Louisville, Lexington being the only blue parts. I'm in Louisville, luckily, so it's a little bit more open, a little bit more diverse. But it's very hard because I don't know if I'll ever leave because I'm just so drawn into what's around me. But I do feel like the ceiling, the limit is already hit here. There's just not a lot going on. So who knows? Maybe one day I will get out. Would love to see Boston, though.
Yeah. Well, if you come up here, let me know.
Absolutely.
I say this to my students. I was saying this before, but like anything that sets you apart and makes you unique is so valuable as a human being, and especially a creative one. So like, I would just think of it as a gift that you are not like, because I'm from Ohio and I've lived in New York and Boston most of my life, like not being from here originally, like I always recognize as a real advantage because I just have this whole like different point of view.
Yeah. A whole different aspect and like perspective on what's going on. Like you said, like, I don't know. It's just something about it.
I chose to be here. Well, it's kind of like, I chose to be here.
Yeah. You're not stuck.
Yeah. And it's like, I can see it's hard to see it's like a fish doesn't know what water is kind of thing. It's hard to see what's always there.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're from a different culture, or, you know, whatever, that's how it feels to be a Jewish person. A lot of Jewish people talk about this, and I'm sure anybody of my minority status. I've always been an American, but kind of like one step removed. You really see it during Christmas, right? Like it's like, and I recognize this every year, but it's like, I always, the dominant culture in my own culture was not my own. And like that, you don't feel that as much in like, you know, here, but when growing up, it was much more of a thing. And, I'm glad I had that experience.
Yeah.
Because it made me, I could see what most people couldn't see around me. And I felt more of like, I could observe people and the culture as an outsider, which is really useful, creatively.
Awesome. No,
all artists
like
are
that.
Like outsiders. Like that's kind of the thing.
Yeah, you ain't lying there, man. I definitely feel like an outsider sometimes as an artist and just sometimes as a person. But like you said, just use it to you. I'm trying to use it to my advantage and just power through it. I do want to go get to the next one real quick. What is your biggest pet peeve?
I'm gearing towards where my head's at right now, like in the space and just in general, is just cynicism and complaining. Just in general, man. I'm a frustrated person generally because I'm an artist and like that's kind of the sensibility. But I don't like artists that are cynical or complain all the time. Like nothing's owed to us. I think it's like it's an act of freedom and beauty every day to make creative work. I don't know, man. It's just like if I have students or I see artists or just generally people in life who are just cynical about what's possible in life or like as a human being and who are just complaining about their situation. I don't.
I get what you're saying.
I hope this doesn't sound insensitive.
No.
I feel like it's like, especially now in America, maybe it's an American culture or kind of an online culture thing, but. You just see people complaining a lot about a lot of stuff, and it feels like
people feel entitled here
almost every day. I'm like, what the fuck, man? Like, the culture is making us do this. It's the news cycle. It's the media. It's all that stuff. But like, fucking stop complaining, man. Like, it's unfair. Life is unfair. It sucks. Like,
life just sucks,
man. I get it. So like, it sucks for everyone.
Yeah, it's not easy. Yeah,
that's, I mean, this is what I actually say this to art. It's so hard to make this a small statement, but like when I am talking to artists on like DMs and stuff, I'm just kind of like, all life is suffering. Like the goal is kind of to transcend it. So like, just accept that it sucks right off the bat. We're all in it together. So let's like enjoy it and do the best we can. But yeah, I come from a place where like, when I'm GMing on the, this is my, when I read, I'm on the timeline, we kind of talk about the timeline. It's kind of become sort of like, it is like the ecosystem is this timeline. Yeah. We're all kind of on this, we can feel when it shifts and you can feel the moods. When I say GM in the morning or like when I'm like commenting or I'm watching the timeline, my default state is like, we're all a bit kind of sad or suffering. And we're making the best of it. And like, look at us beautiful people, like engaging with the culture, putting ourselves out there, making communities, talking to each other. It's still an early form of like this digital communities, even though we've had social media for a while or whatever, but like there's something specific about this community where it's like, this is a positive thing. So like when you have these people come on who are like, this shit sucks, these people are manipulating it, blah, like, this isn't fair, or like, I hate this, or like, good. It's like, I want to just tell those people, like, that's my pet. It seems like it's a pet peeve because it irks me, and it's like over and over again.
I get that.
Yeah.
I get that to the sense of, I mean, I don't, like I said, people in this space, and I'm sorry if you feel called out, anyone specifically, they're very entitled. They feel very entitled that they need something. And I hear a lot of artists, you know, big shout out to a peer of mine, Mike Mongo, you know, a way of changing my outlook was I don't have to do anything. I get to do it. I get the chance to do it. I don't have to make art. I Yes. get the chance to make art. And the people in this space that are artists, you know, if you're an artist, you know, look through history. Not damn near one artist was appreciated. You know what I'm saying? Not damn near one artist was out here super loved and really thought that they were treated fair. None of them out here thought, oh yeah, I'm really getting the recognition I deserve. That never happened. You should feel very lucky to be in a position now to where it's so easy to get your work in front of people, so easy to talk to your collectors, and so easy to get in front of big names, big labels, big medias. And we're still very early. You know, crypto for the last 5-6 years has been a downtrend. It's only been an uptrend for the last year. So a lot of people forget that. And if you are here for the art, I think it will show over time. But I think number four, we have two more left. Number four might be a little interesting. What do people misunderstand about you most?
Yeah, I love this, man. We could, I could talk to you for a long time. I just want to say entitlement is a really good word. That's what I was looking for. I just don't like that because nothing is owed to you. And like I was saying before, no one runs a space. So like being entitled in general is annoying, but like, especially here where like you're not entitled.
Yeah.
Like there is no gatekeeper. There's no one in charge. You didn't have to pay your dues, didn't pay your dues, whatever. I actually like that about the space. Like artists like me felt like coming in, like, yeah, I've been making art for a long time. I'm like had work in museums, but it's like, I have to pay my dues like everyone else. I got to like be in this community and like understand what's going on and build a, and be a part of this. And like, I love that. And I hope I never yet get too entitled that, or feel like the space owes me something or anything like that. What do people misunderstand about me? I mean, in the context of being an artist, like you just said it, like my process that is hand drawn, that it really takes a year to make a minute film. Like people can hear that, but it's really, really hard for them to digest the amount of labor that goes into what I'm doing.
A year.
And I've ultimately realized that like it doesn't matter.
A year?
Yeah, like the film, like my one of ones are like, so like 6 hours a day for like a year.
That's the transparency people don't understand. Like when you said earlier, my piece sold for 73, someone might hear that and be like, why is he talking about money? Bro, because it took him 365 days of dedication and hard work of his own time. It took him years to be able to sell that for 73 ETH. I just wanted that to be known.
Yeah, and ultimately I think that doesn't matter. I mean, that's the thing is like that doesn't matter because I don't think it's about the specific like time spent on an object that gives it value or whatever.
Right.
But when you see my work, like go back, like it has a mind blowing quality. It is overwhelming. It is awesome. And inherently part of like when you see something like that and what makes it cool is kind of like, how did they do that? It is an optical illusion. It is a technique. And I like that. It's magic, man. So it's like, I explain my process. There are videos you can go see of me drawing and how I do my thing. But like people think you don't even care, right? It's like, you tell someone like, how'd you get that guitar effect? And then you show them and they're like, oh, cool. It doesn't make the song like any, it's still like, well, in the song is still this beautiful, like complicated, like it's like kind of doesn't matter. Right. And we see this all the time. I mean, people ask photographers and NFTs like, oh, what camera did you use for this? And they're kind of like, dude, like that's not what this is about really. I get that question all the time. Not generally like, well, like how long did this take? And I kind of want to be like, it took a year, but like, that doesn't really, you know, don't overthink that. Like it basically took an endless amount of effort. It looks as effortful as it is. And then they ask, what software did you use? And I have to be like, it's all hand drawn. And it's like, that's kind of all it takes to be like, oh shit. Like I knew this was awesome and special. I'm trying to figure out the magic trick. And like the magic trick is like human effort. It's my genius. Go through it frame by frame. It is what it is, man. It's like, I made this thing frame by frame. Like how I did it was like, I did it. And it looks as hard to make and as completely original as it is. And so that misunderstanding, it's like, that's always been kind of, you know, my brand. Like companies would have to commission me. Like you can't fake my work. Like we were saying, an AI can't, but like also like you can't hire another artist to imitate me. So that's why there's no like copycats in the NFT space of my work, because
you can't
do it. And if you did do it, it would be so much effort. And that'd be, you know, there are obviously people mimic my technique and things like that. But to kind of consistently do what I do is just sort of like, you just, it's undeniably like a thing that I do. It's my thing. And it looks that certain way. So I do feel like that's a constant thing I have to educate people on. I also compose all this music for my film. I'll do all the sound.
Wow.
And people love the sound. I mean, I'm kind of known for my sound work. And that's a whole nother thing that people don't understand, that like the sound element of my work is really important. And I try to push boundaries in sound design and music as well. And I feel like there's not enough time to educate people about my work. Going back to like what my role as an artist is, like I make this stuff. I also have to disseminate it. And this is something that I feel like might be a useful conversation, but we see this a lot in the space. Like I'm an artist, I don't need to market it all the time, or I don't want to describe what my work's about. The art should speak for itself. And it's yes, this is true in both regards, but I just know from my work, like, it is my job to like educate people about what this thing is, and people are interested in how it's made, and people want to know my process and my thoughts about, like, they want to know not what it's about, but kind of like why we're having this interview. Like, they want to know the background. So like, don't fucking, as an artist, it's like, I didn't decide, I got to market it. I have to educate people about it. I have to tell them about the work. It's like, I have to make NFTs. It's like, it's just kind of, that's what being an artist is. Like, you realize over time, you keep doing it over and over again. It's like, I need a state. I need to like, I need a blurb about what my work's about and like how I make it. And I need to educate people about it. And that's not a bad thing. And I need to share it a lot. And I need to have it in shows so it's disseminated and has cultural value and is marketed. Like, it's kind of just obvious when you have make work that you care about and you want to share it and people care about it, that that's what happens.
100%. That's so crazy. And everyone listening in, I think that's why this is, it made me think, and this is a big reason why I'm going to say, please get the hell off of NFT Inspect. Jokingly, I say that because it seems like everyone in this space, you know, there's a bunch of people that want to be leaders, followers, that's fine. I think the real people of this space, the real quote unquote influencer builders, are the people like yourself, Tyler Hobbs, the Beeples, the artists. And I say that because you get on NFT Inspect, bro, Tyler Hobbs is like 1,000. And, you know, we're talking about Justin Aversano, who makes great art, you know, yourself that makes great art. Y'all aren't the top 5 influencers, but y'all get and understand art. Y'all understand what we're here for. And it's much deeper. You're trying to teach others. And that might be random to say for some people listening in, but I say all that to say, like, that's why I love doing this podcast and bringing people like yourself on here, because I feel like it's my job to help people learn and understand that these artists are much more than just artists. Like, of course, they're people, but they've been creating and putting themselves into their art for a long time. Like, your artwork, like, yeah, we said it took a year to make it, but people need to realize there was also 30 years before that where you've really just done what you've done. You might not have got recognition for it. You might not have got paid for it. You were making it out of the genuineness of your heart and to put it out there because that's who you were. I think that's a big thing. So whenever it comes to influencers and positive people, we definitely got to start uplifting the legitimate artist. And I'm not knocking anyone and saying, hey, you're not an artist because you don't make it like this. But there are people out here who dedicate a lot of time in their whole life to this and want to create something that lives much longer. Let me transition to the last question. Very easy in the aspect of questions wise. I think I might know the answer, but if you won $10 million tomorrow, what would you spend it on? Me personally, I would like to think it would probably be your family and art, but I'm loving to hear your answer.
Yeah. Wow. I've never even considered that question. Yeah, I'm a married man.
Yeah.
So are you married?
I am not. Luckily, I'm not. Maybe one day I've been with my girlfriend for 5 years.
If I won $10 million tomorrow, my wife won $10 million. And, I got nothing really to do with it anymore. Considering that it would be, I'm lucky enough that would be mostly disposable at this point. We want to save some for our daughter, obviously.
Yep.
I think if we needed more money, it would just be like travel, maybe better housing. Being able to afford, private schooling for my daughter would be an amazing thing like that.
I like that.
I'd like to think that like I can make that kind of income where things are heading. And like, so 10 million to me doesn't feel like that impossible number, but yeah, it's not like my lifestyle is going to change at all. That's where I've been this year. Like, I'm still teaching, not because I have to. Obviously making art every day, not because I have to financially. So it's like, I'd probably buy a lot of fucking NFTs, right?
Yes, sir.
I'd buy my first punk just to have a punk. I'm talking about PFPs and all that stuff. It's like, I'm in it for the art and I love the art, but like, there's something sexy about having a punk and like, not having to worry about selling it ever.
Right.
Because that's really why, like, if I bought a punk now, I'd be like, just stupid as an investment for my the amount of money that I make as a, you know, we didn't get into that, but like, come on, you got to be smart.
Absolutely.
About this space too. And I'm not trying to go broke on like big risky bets or anything like that. But yeah, I collect a lot of art just for the love of it and to support other artists for sure. And obviously talking about humility and stuff, you win that kind of money, like you better give at least half of it to charity, if not like
something, yeah,
other positive. People who you think are doing good work. So that's what I would do. I will say this is to humble myself or whatever, like somewhere where I think I can improve is like, I don't have a lot of like charitable, that's not true actually. So I auctioned something at Christie's this summer for psychedelic research. This is a big piece, a one-on-one that I let go for all the proceeds to go to that. So I feel really good about that I could use my work for something, you know, charitable. And like, I really believe in the mission of what they're doing. And like,
yeah.
I actually think psychedelic, especially therapies, can be a game changer over the next, you know, 50 years. Some people in this space really are consciously giving back as much as they possibly can day after day. And like, I'm kind of focused on my art and promoting my art and collecting shit I like. It's a little selfish, but I do think for the good of the world and the space or whatever, like that's what I should be doing ultimately. But I do want to think the more success I have and like you're saying, like I'm not an influencer and I do not hopefully act like that. But the influence that I have, I hope I would show that like, yeah, that I would give it back to good causes. And like, my friend Drift, man, like he's giving serious money to away based on his open edition drop and stuff. And like, I respect that a lot. And I think it's a beautiful thing. And think like, again, what's the point of this at the end of the day? Like if it ultimately becomes like a very lucrative, then it is about like, what do I do with that? Not just as an artist, what am I doing for the world? But like, what am I doing financially for the world, I guess.
Get that. I like that, man. I mean, the fact that, you know, I would like to think where you're going, you will be able to hit that milestone of the amount of money. But I love that, you know, you have a beautiful baby girl, you have your family, and you're just doing what you can to take care of your family, take care of yourself, go forward in life, become better at your craft, help what you feel is right. And I mean, you know, there's no perfect people out here in this world, but I mean, you're living life to what you feel is the fullest. And I feel that's what matters. You know, you've had a great career and I hope it continues to go far. And as we end this, I do want to say, Jake, you've been someone in this space that I think is a great artist. Getting to learn more about you, knowing that you're a teacher, just learning more of the background, it makes me that much more interested in your work and just knowing the process and learning more about you. This has been fun. Hands down, my longest podcast ever. And I like that for the simple fact of it was with someone who genuinely cares about art, the space, the people around him, and just someone who's been working on their craft for a long time. I have respect for that. So from me to you, thank you so much for today's episode, man.
You're very kind. That means a lot to me. Thank you. Yeah, I love the chat. And I'm happy to have what I'm saying being shared. So I appreciate you taking the time and helping to share my voice with the world.
Absolutely.
Stay in touch.
Absolutely, man. Stick around because I got something for you after this. But everyone listening in, I thank you so much. This might be the last episode of 2022, might be the first one of 2023. I don't know yet. We're going to see how it goes with my audio engineer. But I thank you all for listening and supporting all year. It's been an absolute blast. As always, in the description and whenever I post this, I will be linking Jake's work. So please, I encourage you to go follow him on Twitter and where he does his stuff. They're absolutely marvelous. If you can't afford, you could still look at him and, you know, reach out to him and just be like, yo, man, super talented. Love what you do. But everyone listening in, thank you so much from the bottom of my heart. And we will be seeing you next year or next week. Either way, thank you. Y'all have a good one.